Greetings and welcome to episode 140 of the Nerdstravaganza podcast, where we meet all of our stretch goals. I'm Tom.
I'm Brian.
I'm Chris.
And I'm Cam.
And tonight, we'll be talking about PAX South and some Kickstarter, specifically video gaming Kickstarters, which is a slight departure from our normal theme of tabletop Kickstarters, but I think fits in quite nicely with our overall support of crowdfunding. But before we jump into that, we will do our usual weekly roundup. And let's have Brian go first.
I haven't actually done very much lately. Just been a little bit busy editing episodes and working on wiping out our hard work on the website. But I have, as is becoming very common for me, been enthralled with Kickstarters. And this week, I don't understand what is happening with this Exploding Kittens Kickstarter.
What?
It's kind of like Uno, and it's a $20 card game, and it has raised $4.2 million with 25 days left.
Yeah, it's
what?
Ridiculous. It's crazy.
Did I just hear you right? $4.2
million? $4.2
million
in about 7 days. So
wow. It
will probably be over $10 million when all is said and done.
And this is a card game about kittens exploding.
Yes. The kittens are bad. They explode if you get them, so you don't want to get them. So it's all about, like, pass your turn to another player, or don't draw a card this turn, or it's a card game. It's a deck of cards. It's got some decent internet-themed art on it.
Wow.
Sounds sort of like Pairs, but just with an exploding cat.
The buy-in is $20, and I think like the common goal is $35. So $35 at a time, they've raised $4 million.
That's insane.
Guys, I'm sick of working a day job, so Catstravaganza is going to be our Kickstarter. We will get it going and figure out the details later. Damn, man.
As a stretch goal, I think my face should be on the front cover of the card. Should be on the card back, actually.
As long as you don't mind us photoshopping on some whiskers and ears, that's fine, Chris.
No problem at all.
Wow, man. Okay, so that's great. 4.2 million for cats that explode.
4.2 million, like one quarter of the way.
I quit. I'm just going to go ahead and sign off. But you guys have...
Yeah, right.
Man, that's awesome. I do congratulate them on their success and will certainly do my part to contribute to the ever so modest Kickstarter that is Cat Explosion. Is that right? Cat Explosions?
Exploding Kittens.
Oh, sorry, I even forgot the name.
Makes it even better. Exploding Kittens, not just regular cats. Baby kittens are exploding.
They should call it Money Pinatas instead.
Yeah, I think the last time a gaming sort of thing broke 4.3 million... for Kickstarter, it was the Double Fine, which was the original one that kind of restarted a whole genre of video games.
I don't think Double Fine got this high.
Sure.
This is like the third most valuable Kickstarter in all of history.
Wow.
106,424 backers.
Man.
That's amazing. I mean, what kind of marketing are they doing? I mean, they must be doing ridiculous marketing.
They're the oatmeal. That's their marketing.
I gotcha.
Wait, is it the oatmeal that's doing it?
Yes.
Yeah, it's,
one of the artists from the oatmeal.
Yeah, created by Ellen Lee, the oatmeal, and Shane Small. Okay, yeah.
There you go.
That makes sense.
I've been grousing about this to myself because no one will listen. This is going to destroy Kickstarter. This proves once and for all that you can, as a successful company, ask people for money and they will just throw it at you despite an original idea, needing the money in the first place, offering value for that. I mean, I guess a deck of cards for 10 times what any other deck of cards would cost is fair, but...
Well, I mean, again, the market seems to bear these sorts of crowdfunding efforts on the part of established companies. Like, I understand it's not really the point of Kickstarter, but I don't know that... There's something to be said for brand loyalty and people paying for what they know, as maybe unhappy as that makes us to admit, right?
So at what point can Blizzard do a Kickstarter for World of Warcraft 2 collect $1 billion, put it in the bank for 10 years, and then just develop their game.
Right now, I mean, they could, they clearly can go ahead and do that right now, and it would get funded to death.
Well, and you know, Brian, I mean, typically, like, if a company wanted to raise money to, say, sell widgets or toasters or whatever it is, I mean, that's what you do. You go to Money Guys, and you raise the money through them, and then you start your company, and you, you know, you do what you got to do. This is just cutting out the venture capitalists and the banks and whatever, and just saying, okay, people who already have a vested interest in this product and that want it, here's what we're going to do. So fund us instead of us having to go to our bank and get a factor loan or mezzanine loan or something like that. We can just go to the people that are actually going to want the product, get the money in advance, and then deliver the product. I think as long as they're delivering the product, then that's fine. I mean, the sticky part comes when you start getting into, you know, which has always been crowdfunding's issue, and I know the government is looking at it closely, is this is technically a sale of securities, and it falls under all sorts of SEC regulations, but the government has sort of taken a hands-off approach as to how hard they're enforcing that, you know, those rules.
And I know at least one RPG company. They have two levels of Kickstarter. One is officially on Kickstarter, and then another one is an in-house system they use for smaller projects.
I mean, doesn't anyone develop with their own money anymore?
Not in RPGs. Some of this indie RPG companies, this is like their business model now.
But we're not talking about an indie site.
Is Kickstarter's policy now that you must deliver in order to keep the money you raise?
No. You must meet your funding goal, and they do not fucking care if you deliver. Not to put any blame on them whatsoever. I understand that's the risk. But, I mean, if the oatmeal decided to just run with this money, Kickstarter would not be involved. Sorry, that's a risk.
Okay, so as a manufacturer of a product or somebody looking to create a product, I basically enter into a, and Cam can probably use much more accurate legal terminology for this, but a completely, like, nothing on my end contract with people who back my enterprise with no expectation of a return, and I'm not even accountable to them. Why wouldn't I do that?
Well, I mean, I think it technically is, it would be considered a contract. A contract is just a meeting of the minds and consideration being some sort of value exchanged.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I mean, you have a meeting of the minds. They're telling you, if you give us X, if you pledge X dollars, we're going to give you whatever this product is. So you have a meeting of the minds, and you have consideration being changed hands, because when it funds, your money is taken out of your PayPal account. So there is a quote unquote contract. The question is, what are you going to do if they don't deliver? I mean, you basically would need to sue them for $40.
Right.
You know?
I mean,
that's where sort of, and I know it's boring and I don't want to get too far down this path, but like, you know, that's what the whole SEC regulation thing, SEC laws and rules and stuff were created to guard against. You know, they wanted to, safeguard mom and pop investors and people putting in not that much money from, you know, just being scammed. And that's why, you know, the rules are so strict as to how you can actually raise money. So if I wanted to get $1 million, and to Brian, to your point, I mean, no one, you know, I mean, unless you're really an indie mom and pop organization, no business of any size uses their own money. They go to a bank or they go to an investor and they say, hey, this is our business plan. Here's our model. This is what we want to do. Either give us a loan or invest X dollars, and this is what your return is going to be, either an interest or stock or whatever it is. And then they go out and they run their business. And if they make money, great. The investor gets paid or the bank gets paid back and everyone's happy. If not, then, you know, they declare bankruptcy or the investor's out their money and that's it. In this situation, they're just taking a little bit from a lot of people. And technically, if you really read the rules, you know, the SEC rules, which I don't advise anyone to do, but, I mean, unless you're going to invest in this and you want to know, cause it'll probably put you to sleep, but this is against the law technically, but it's just funny that the government has chosen not to really enforce it because, I don't think there's been that big of a, it's going to take a big ripoff, and then the government will step in and say, okay, hey, well, you know, this obviously is becoming a problem and now we have to regulate.
I have a question, Cam. I don't know if something like this might be the catalyst for the government stepping in or not.
Right.
But $4.2 million raised, let's say $10 million raised, and not that the Oatmeal would ever do this or the artist from the Oatmeal would ever do this, but let's say they just like, well, thanks for the $10 million, we're out. Wouldn't some enterprising lawyer look at that not as, oh, who cares about 40 bucks, but more like, hey, I've got like $10 million worth of like ill-gotten loot that I can try to recover on behalf of all these people and keep a little cut for myself.
Right, and just legal disclaimer, I'm not providing legal advice to anybody, so guys, anyone listening is on their own. There's no attorney-client relationship between any of us. But to your point, yes, an enterprising lawyer could say, okay, these people got ripped off. I'm going to start a class action lawsuit against whoever took the money. But, you know, that is a very expensive and a very difficult and complex endeavor. So if you're talking about, I mean, the Oatmeal, I don't even know what the Oatmeal's financials look like. I mean, maybe they're a $20 million company, I have no idea how much what their value is, but even that is small potatoes to class action lawyers. You know, those guys go after guys and girls. I'm sorry. I don't mean to be sexist. Those attorneys go after Disney. They go after Ford. They go after Toyota, you know, the big, huge companies that will, you know, have deep pockets because, you know, these settlements end up in the billions most of the time. And then they take their, you know, 25, 30, 33% or whatever it is.
Mm.
So, yeah, I don't even know that would be worth it. But, you know, one of the funding people may end up being a lawyer and, you know, just decide to, hey, I don't care what it costs. I'm just going to do it just because, you know, I want to do what's right and, you know, and go after someone. But then at that point, you know, they declare bankruptcy and you end up with nothing anyway. So it's like,
so absent any like easy to pull levers to put pressure on these people to do the right thing that the government might put in place. I mean, it sounds like the best I could hope for is a ripped off backer is kind of Rick Moranis style boob of a lawyer, maybe taking the case.
Not necessarily. I mean, I back a lot of Kickstarters. I like to think that I'm fairly competent, but I mean, you know, but at the same time, I'm not going to be starting any class action lawsuits. I mean,
well, that's what I meant. Yeah. The lawyer kickstarting that lawsuit, no pun intended, is the guy from Ghostbusters, like fumbling with his papers. Yeah. Like,
exactly. Well, maybe I could start a Kickstarter campaign to fund the lawsuit, you know.
There you go.
but I mean, you know, it's funny that, like, you know, it actually brings to mind, Brian and I have backed on not on Kickstarter but on Indiegogo a game called Grimagia, which is like an anime sort of monster type game, card game, and we just got an email from like 8 of the people that were on the project saying, hey, we're off the project. We don't want to be associated with this guy anymore. So thanks for the memories, but see ya. Basically bad mouthing the guy. So I text Brian and I was like, oh no, did we just throw away 50 bucks basically, you know? So who knows what's going to happen there. We'll report back and see if, you know, if it gets delivered on time. But, you know, I think you're pretty much just out the money and absent the SEC coming in and saying, okay, you know, you guys can use Kickstarter or do what you got to do, but there's going to be some criminal sanctions if you rip people off. Then, you know, I don't know what, you know, if there's any other solution that's really going to, you know, help anyone out.
So I just checked. There's a website that tracks Kickstarters, and it's not perfect because obviously computers can't see the future either, but it's pretty accurate based on average donor per day and average pledge per donor and all that kind of stuff. They're projecting $16,222,889.
Is it KickTracker?
KickTrack.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They're actually fairly accurate.
They're very accurate. $16 million.
Man, I must have been really lucky because I've backed 10. 9 have delivered so far, and the 10th one is dragging its feet, but I still feel fairly confident they'll come out at some point.
Well, interesting that we kind of kicked off the Weekly Geekly on a Kickstarter theme, because that's what I'm going to talk about during the main body of the episode. That should be an interesting conversation, but let us, in the meantime, continue. Brian, anything else to report from your update? It sounds like you kind of did update and news there.
The only other thing I'll talk about is I DVR'd the latest King of the Nerds
Oh, dear.
Show. It was episode one of the new season, and I haven't watched it yet, but I'm really looking forward to seeing how bad it is this year. They're promising 16-eyed romance.
Oh, boy.
Oh, boy. King of the Nerds. Yay. It still exists.
I mean, I'm happy to see that, you know, Booger and what's-his-name, Skolnick, you know, have a job. and I'm shocked that I pulled those names out of my head, but, like, that show is pretty terrible.
Yeah, I hate to admit it, because I had high hopes for it, and we covered the first season somewhat extensively, but yeah, I'm with you.
And then I don't know if you guys saw the promos for this second season, but it was like those two, Skolnick and Booger, like rapping.
Oh, dear.
And it was
Oh, just, Jesus Christ, I hate that.
Yeah, it was just douche chills. It was terrible.
Yeah, never watched the show, didn't feel the urge to watch the show, happy I didn't watch the show.
Yeah, don't. let's move on. Brian, was that it for you?
That is it for me.
Okay, I guess we will have Chris go next then.
Okay, so for my Geekly Weekly, I did a couple of things. I caught up with Agent Carter, and I'm really enjoying the show. It's kind of cool, though. In a way, I was thinking it's more S.H.I.E.L.D., and it comes off to me more as kind of a British sort of pulpy sci-fi show, because both of the main characters are British versus, you know, thinking how it was going to be more like S.H.I.E.L.D. back in 1945. I'm not complaining. I'm still enjoying the show. I'm just getting a different vibe than I expected, but that's okay. Probably the main critique that my girlfriend has is she's like, well, why doesn't Agent Carter just show all her male co-workers how much ass she can kick and then they'll stop being sexist pigs? Because basically, the kind of the theme of the show is as the GIs are coming home from World War II, all these women that have had full-on jobs in you know, filling in are now getting downsized. And, you know, and everyone's expecting them to just kind of, you know, go back to being the meek little, you know, second-class citizens that they were going to be. And the reason why they need to give these jobs to guys is so they can have the jobs and marry the women that had them. And I'm explaining to her, it's like, you know, when it's a whole cultural mindset, people aren't, you're not going to change minds. They're going to find their reasons or just, you know, not even bother with it. Another thing I did is I kind of got off on the deep end checking out Mutants and Masterminds. It's a role-playing game for superhero comics. I have a project I think I might want to do with it, which would be much more low-level. So that was kind of why I was getting into it, was to see if I could do something more low-level than people in spandex costumes throwing around buses and trains. Oh, I also, speaking of Kickstarters, checked out two that I had backed. Wastelands 2 just had a new patch, so I checked that out. That's a bit of retro goodness that I enjoy, though I can only get to it a little bit because it's very in-depth. It has a high learning curve to it. And also Storium, which one of our previous guests, Chuck Windig, is involved in. And it's more of kind of an online storytelling role-playing system. There's no real dice to roll. Basically, you set up scenarios and you give your players these cards they can use, and the amount of cards they use can overcome a situation. For some reason, I'm just not really grokking the system like I would, or maybe I'd get into it. That's about it for me.
So, Cam, man, that brings it over to you, man. What's been going on?
Oh, let's see. Had a pretty pretty slow week. Just, you know, did some gaming Thursday night game night. That was fun. Then I went out of town. Actually left from our game night Thursday night, like around 1 a.m. and drove up to Orlando because I had some business stuff to take care of on Friday up in Orlando. And then I just spent time with my brother, and we played a lot of Destiny on the PS4. We did some tabletop gaming. I taught him a few games. He's not really big into tabletop gaming, but I showed him a few games that he liked that I actually just had in my trunk. And then I headed back down south, back here to South Florida on Sunday. Hit our, you know, the other game night sponsored by the Adventure Game Store Sunday night. Did some tabletop gaming there. That's about it. Just like Brian, I mean, I've funded a couple of Kickstarters, which I'm sure we'll talk about in the when we get to our topic, and just been sort of following that Exploding Kittens thing as well as the Cones of Dunshire, which had a pretty hot start. It raised like, you know, $30,000-$40,000 right away of its $300,000 goal, but now it's, I think it's sliding in the wrong direction. So, and for, you know, for anyone that didn't hear last week, it's the Parks and Recreation game that they, Mayfair Games sort of picked up and ran with and started a Kickstarter for, and, sort of said it was a joke, but maybe it's not. Looks like it sort of is a joke, and I definitely don't think it's going to hit its $300,000 goal. And that's about it for me.
I don't think you can come to someone and say, hey, look, this is probably a joke, but give me money.
Give me $500 per play.
Yeah.
Ridiculous.
Guys, I feel like we should do a Jim Cramer style thing, if you guys know who that is, like the Mad Money show or whatever, but like all about Kickstarter. Just some of the lingo we're using, like camera, it's got a off to a hot start, but I'm not thinking it's going to hit stretch goals and not looking really good. And like I just like have like a dump or back button, ding, something like that.
That would be and awesome. I think that this particular Kickstarter is a no-go from what I've seen.
And then, like, yeah, and so and as soon as you say that, somebody hits, like, the soundboard, no-go.
Or just, like, a foghorn.
Exactly. I'm
in
saying
Kickstarter,
dump it.
It's plateaued for now, but I see it raising in the future. You might want to jump on it now while you can.
It's a buy and hold.
It's a buy and hold.
Now here we have a serious contender from young upstart Blizzard. Nobody's ever heard of this company before. They're new to the kickstarting arena. Let's see how they do.
Yeah, right. I mean,
analysts say Blizzard has had some measure of success in other areas of endeavor. They should do well on Kickstarter.
Oh, that actually reminds me. I'm glad you brought that up, Tom. I've been feverishly trying to pick up one of these World of Warcraft 10-year anniversary orc statues that flooded the market this week.
Ah.
On eBay, but I think I'm gonna pass.
The flood has not brought the price down to acceptable levels for you?
No, I can't see paying $300-$400 for that statue. Of course, I'll probably be kicking myself when it's worth like, you know, $1,500 next year, but like, I don't know. I haven't pulled the trigger yet. I told myself if I can snag one for in the twos, I probably would do it, but, you know.
You know what, man? I got a lot of early 90s foil wrapped comics I could sell you if you think those ones are going to go up in price.
Exactly.
I have all 24 issues of the Manhunter series.
Oh, man.
Ready to go.
Yeah. No, I mean, I was buying it more because I just like the statue. It looks really killer if you've seen it. But, you know, at 200, that's too much.
We should hop on GoFundMe and get Cam an orc.
All right, we'll get on that after the show. We'll see how our Kickstarters perform this week.
Yeah,
see what our dividend checks are looking like when they come in. All right, I guess that's over to me. And I missed last Thursday's game night because I was flying to San Antonio where I attended the first ever PAX South. PAX being the Penny Arcade Expo. I have been to the Seattle one, PAX Prime, a couple times. I have now hit up the first ever PAX South. That means I still have to hit up PAX East, which is in Boston. And, of course, PAX Australia, which should be no big deal to get to, I'm sure. While there, I have a few really cool sort of updates for you. First of all, I gave Uber a try in San Antonio. I used it to get to my hotel and around town. And I'm sold on it. Uber is awesome. I don't ever want to ride in a taxi again. I only want to use Uber.
Yeah, Uber's great. I love Uber.
So describe to me that experience.
Uber?
We can digress for a moment. Yeah. I know what it is. I mean, you use your app to find somebody who's playing cab driver.
Yes.
With their personal car.
It's by no means a digression. I think this fits the geeky bill. It's obviously a tech solution to the crummy problem of getting a cab. Not that cabs were ever hard to find, but basically on a whim, if you want to go somewhere, you open up the Uber app. And like put in your, like I always put in my destination to get an estimate and then just click send me a car. And my longest wait time was like 5 minutes and somebody was there to take me where I needed to go. It's on-demand transportation, man. It is great.
And it's cheaper than a cab, right?
Yes. It came in at about half of what the cab estimates were in San Antonio. So definitely cheaper and the people are nicer. I mean, not to impugn cabbies, but it just seems like I get all the rude and or indifferent ones whenever I take a cab.
Oh, and San Antonio is a great town, by the way. I was there a couple of years ago.
Oh, man. This was my third visit. The first time I was in basic training, so I didn't get to see too much of it. The second time I was a free man in the Air Force and got to see a lot more of it. And this time I was a civilian, and it was cool. I had fond memories of it, and those were reinforced by this visit. So recommend San Antonio.
Did you get some good barbecue?
Oh, yeah, the barbecue. That's right.
Yeah, with my vegan predilections, my pseudo-veganism, I am not a barbecue guy, but we did some nice Tex-Mex and found a really great vegan Tex-Mex place, which was absolutely fantastic.
They barbecue quinoa, don't they?
Probably. We just didn't look hard enough. I'm on kind of a weight loss fitness kick this year, too, anyway, so I was definitely trying to keep the diet together while I was there. But yeah, San Antonio. I'm sure they have good barbecue if that's your thing, and the town has a lot going for it, including PAX South.
I'm jealous.
Oh, man. Let's go next year. Let's do it.
Australia. I'm totally down to go to Australia.
All right. I'm down. Let's make this happen.
We can write it off Ganza expenses.
That's true. We'll get our accountant on that. Figure out.
No, IRS. We're not going to write that off.
yeah. No agents heard this.
Could the detour to New Zealand to see Hoppeton be another business expense?
Absolutely, of course. And then, for sure. since we're in that area, you might as well pop up to Japan. I'm sure there's something we need to see there.
Oh my God!
Research.
We need to see the new Attack on Titan attractions.
Universal. Did you see that? That looks amazing.
Yeah, it does. okay, so tried Uber. I bought a really cool Luke Skywalker Akira crossover shirt from the We Love Fine booth. And inside, as I looked inside the tag, it had the official Star Wars logo. So I think they actually got an official nod from the license holder to make this thing. And it's basically the iconic image of of Kaneda walking towards his motorcycle from Akira.
Yeah.
I think that's Kaneda and not Tetsuo doing that. It's Luke walking towards his speeder, and it's pretty cool.
That's awesome.
With the what I assume is legit kanji written over it. So yeah, pretty pretty badass.
Tom, I'm actually interested to hear your thought. You know, I'm a huge fan of the shirts like that, the mashup shirts. As a matter of fact, I'm wearing my Bad Wolf House Stark mashup shirt right now. It's basically Bad Wolf from Doctor Who, and it's written on the Stark House banner or whatever. Wolf.
Yeah.
But I get a lot of my shirts from Redbubble, which I don't think ever bother to license any of the things that they do. And so I'm a little conflicted as to, if they do something like that, is it then art, or are they still just basically stealing the trademarks of these different companies, and should we care? I'm interested to get your take on that.
My take as just a layman, and you being a man of the law, you would know better than I. But I mean, yeah, of course they're stealing. They're profiting off of somebody else's trademark/copyright/, hey, this is my thing that I thought up. And I think that if the rights holders were smart, they would have a canon tier system where we have officially sanctioned merchandise and then like blanket license. Like, yeah, you can use the likeness. I mean, we're not behind it. We're not backing it. We don't approve of it. But, for a certain percentage of every dollar you make, we'll let you go ahead and use the likeness. Because I think they're missing out on a lot of cash. By not doing something like that.
Yeah, no, I agree with you 100%. I mean, if you ask me as an attorney, they're definitely violating the law. But, at the same time, do you really want to stifle people's expression? I don't think so either. But, and I don't mind, I don't even mind paying someone because they had a nice idea. I love the shirt that I'm wearing. It's cool. And, George R.R. Martin didn't think of it, and neither did the BBC. So, why should they not be able to profit from that good idea? I don't know.
Well, right. So a company should be able to weigh brand dilution versus cashing in on that a little bit. And I think instead of just sending a cease and desist letter, you send a cease and desist or agree to this kind of, pre-canned contract wherein we are not endorsing your product, but you're going to give us a percentage and we're not going to ask that you cease and desist.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know.
I look at it as the shoe being on the other foot. I mean, can't a corporation just get by on getting some exposure? Just like how like a lot of businesses want creative people to do things just on exposure.
Yeah, I mean, I think it pays dividends in a certain respect, but it should also pay them a little cash. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, I don't.
Well, I agree.
Yeah, I don't think they should have to settle just for the promotion value. But you know, I like Tom's idea of yeah, okay, fine, you can do it, but you know, you're going to pay us, and you know, we're it's going to be clear that we're not sanctioning you know what you're doing.
Yep.
You know, I had a really weird idea. Maybe we'll talk about it sometime. I wonder how things would go if people who did marketing and advertising actually got a cut off of the products they promote. Like, you know, whoever came up with, like, the Coca-Cola logo, I mean, what would their family be like if they were still getting a cut of every time that they used that, you know, the corporation used that real logo? Or Nike. Because a lot of that stuff is done by a third person. What if that, instead of saying, you know what, instead of just paying me work for a higher rate, just give me, like, 0.0001% of your profit.
I'm sure maybe deals like that are struck in a company's infancy, but Coca-Cola will I don't think a successful business would ever concede to share like even a fraction of the profits when they could just have some like guy on the payroll do it and then have no rights to anything, right?
Yeah, and Coca-Cola is a private company anyway, so they so they're fine. But yeah, like Nike, yeah, none of those big companies would ever stand for that. But yeah, I bet you there are deals that have been struck like that when people didn't have money to pay an artist and they say, okay, fine. Well, you know, if this hits, we'll pay you, you know, X dollars as a licensing fee for whatever.
From personal experience, I guarantee you that never happens. It's always either a very small fee or it's a, hey, do this free for exposure. And everyone ever offers a percentage.
Well, in the publishing world, maybe, but it, you know, I just, in my profession, in the corporate world, with small businesses and startups and stuff like that, that happens more than you think.
I have absolutely no proof to back this up. I don't have a source on the internet or anything like that, but I've read it a few times and, you know, enthusiasts who talk to other enthusiasts have corroborated it, but I've always heard that Disney had a incentive program and that the guy who came up with those damn pins like just retired. They're like, here's $1 billion. Thanks so much for that idea.
Oh, well that, see now something like that where you're giving the employee who comes up with it a relatively, you know, relative to that person's worth, large payout or reward. Yeah, that's fine. Cause that still works out in the company's interest. Like we're giving you a pittance from our perspective, but to you, it's a fortune. However, we're not giving you this to hold in perpetuity. Like we're paying you off,
right,
and keeping it.
Yeah, it's still work for hire, basically.
Yeah. Okay, so I'm digging all these tangents, but I suspect by now the audience is like, "Come on, is there a point to this episode?" So
no, there isn't.
And we haven't even done the news yet.
Right? I know. I hope like it was a slow news week because otherwise this is like a 7-hour ordeal. Okay. Anyway, I also got lucky.
Nice.
In the pack sense of got lucky.
Woo!
In my pack sense of got lucky, not to take away from the exploits of anybody who are like romantically successful at conventions. I
I'm sorry. Go on.
I stood in line with my friend who was with me, actually Nick, who is a Nerdtravaganza alum, to play Dungeon Defenders 2. I never played Dungeon Defenders 1, but Nick told me it was cool and the game did not disappoint. I got to actually do a demo. However, our demo was delayed because they were holding a raffle, and we were in the last, say, dozen or so or two people to get in line who qualified for this raffle. And they were like, you know, we're going to have to postpone your demo, and you may not be able to play your entire demo before the floor closes. But you guys want in on this raffle? I mean, you might win something. Like, okay. And they're giving away t-shirts, they're giving away pins, they're giving away little tchotchkes and stuff, and our number doesn't come up, our number doesn't come up, our number doesn't come up. Well, my number came up. My number came up, and I, who never win anything in raffles, won a very nice set of Alienware headset, I should say.
Nice.
Yeah, which was pretty cool, because I don't have, like, a gaming headset for the PC. So I got my mind kind of blown by that. And in addition, I won a shirt, a pin, geez, a bunch of cool merchandise, and of course a key for Dungeon Defenders 2. So and then got to finally demo the game after all that and really enjoyed it. So I want to definitely give a shout out to Dungeon Defenders 2. Really fun tower defense meets third person action game. As I told one of the creative minds behind it who I was talking to, tower defense can be a little dry for me on its own, but the action elements of this kept me in it and it caused me to really enjoy it. I just wanted to say on one hand that game was cool, and two, that I'm pretty psyched to have won. Thanks for the prizes. Thanks for the raffle. Thanks for the cool demo.
Man, you cleaned up. Free game, free Alienware. That's awesome.
Yeah, I'm pretty pumped about it. So that would have been the highlight of PAX, except for one other highlight. As it happened, PAX South concluded on the very night that the WWE's Royal Rumble was taking place.
Oh, no.
So Nick and I are coming up with a technical solution to get like either my tablet or my laptop to get an HDMI signal out to our room TV. Well, it occurred to us, because we went to a Giant Bomb panel, that Giant Bomb was there, and a number of the luminaries from that show are wrestling fans. So just for kicks, we checked their message boards and followed their tweets and everything. And actually, at my suggestion, Nick was very diligent about looking that stuff up. Anyway, long story short, we ended up going to a Royal Rumble party or your viewing that they set up at a nearby bar and got to like spend the night in a room full of crazy fans. It was almost like you were there drinking and watching the Royal Rumble. So that was an unexpected highlight of PAX. Many thanks to Giant Bomb. Many thanks to the WWE. Many thanks to beer.
And were you one of the millions that were very upset with the outcome? I don't want to go too far down that tangent, but you know.
I'll just say this. There were two things going on. There was a triple threat match for the title in which Brock Lesnar, the former MMA fighter, well, wrestler turned MMA fighter turned wrestler again, retained the title, which was awesome. That was awesome. Like that was actually what I was most looking forward to, even more than the Rumble. And the outcome there was badass. It was a great match. Best part of that show. Then the Royal Rumble happened, and a guy who they've been pushing on everybody as the next big thing, but who is nevertheless not ready to be the next big thing, got put over as the champion. And there were audible boos in the crowd at the event, and there were audible boos in the bar as well. People were not happy about this fellow winning. His name's Roman Reigns. You can look him up. He's a talented guy. He's got potential. I can see him being big. It just feels like it's not his time yet, and they're pushing him, and the fans are not digging it. I'm among them.
Yeah, it's been all over the news lately about how like just WWE subscriptions are just tanking because he's the new champ. It's crazy.
People started, there was a hashtag for unsubscribing from the WWE network, and people were just really bummed about it, not feeling it. And I felt bad for Roman Reigns getting booed. He's a good guy. He's a talented guy. He's just, again, he hasn't been developed into the face of the company or a future face of the company yet. So sorry about that, Roman Reigns, but I'm with the majority. I know you are an avid listener and are going to be disappointed to hear this, but
I'm sure he's crushed right now.
I'm sure.
Listening to the show.
Yeah. All the way to the bank and being like in awesome shape and a wrestler. He's really broken up over it.
Exactly.
So anyway, that concludes my very PAX-y update. And if you have any questions about any of that PAX stuff, we can bring it up during tonight's topic.
Cool.
So unless you guys have anything to ask immediately, I think we should transition into the news extravaganza. And Brian, I think you had some hot news off the presses to share. Why don't you go first?
I don't really follow Hollywood that closely, so I'm not really sure what any of this means. But everybody was clamoring that the guy playing Star-Lord is probably going to be playing Indiana Jones in the reboot.
Chris Pratt. So,
sounds right.
Yeah. I mean, I like him as an actor, so I'm not terribly upset about it.
I'm one of the, like, 12 people on Earth who have still not seen Guardians of the Galaxy, so I can't really comment, but you know, the nerd excitement did wear off on me immediately.
Are you doing it out of, like, any particular reason? Like, are you boycotting? Like, I boycotted Titanic just because I just didn't want to see it because everyone was seeing it, you know, way back. Is it something like that, or you just haven't gotten around to see it?
No, I just actually never go to the movies. I usually wait till something's out on DVD or you know, cable or something like that. And I don't think that's out. If it is, I just haven't gotten around to picking it up.
Yeah, no, yeah, it's definitely out. It's definitely out.
Yeah, it just came out actually a couple of weeks ago, I think.
Oh, all right. I missed it in the Christmas hubbub.
Yep.
Methinks we should consider an episode devoted to rebooting of franchises.
Yeah,
just
absolutely.
A thought. Just a thought. Not that any of us have suggested that recently or anything.
Yeah.
No, not at all.
Yes, yes. Brian, more news, sir?
Sad news for people local to Dania, whatever that area is. Boomers, which used to be Grand Prix Racerama, has closed its doors for the final time. Soon to be a strip mall, I think.
Terrible. The last vestige of our arcade past here in South Florida. Well, at least in this part of South Florida, right?
Yeah, I had many a good time at the old Grand Prix Racerama.
Me too.
I blame myself. I was never that into Boomers, but I did love Grand Prix, and I'm going to miss it.
Do you know if the Boomers in West Palm is going to close too, or is it just that one in Fort Lauderdale?
I believe that one remains unaffected, having actual business there.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a totally different neighborhood out there too.
Yeah.
Let's be honest, guys. Boomers, like a lot of... Well, Grand Prix before it and then Boomers after they bought it, made a lot of compromises in order to cling to life long after its time had passed. You know what I mean? It had become an arcade rife with redemption games and sort of non-video game stuff. I don't want to say I wanted to see it gone, but it almost feels like putting it out of its misery in a way.
Yeah.
Well, I was there for a kind of one of those ironic birthday party things where, you know, the person is like 40 years old, so we're going to go to Boomers, ha ha ha. And what surprised me was they were doing stand-up arcade versions of mobile games. So you could play Fruit Ninja on a big touchscreen.
Yes. Yes, indeed. I am familiar.
I never had anything like Boomers in my childhood, but I made sure my son had a couple of good times there, so he's a little bummed.
Yeah, that sucks. Well, who knows? Maybe some new arcade will rise up in its absence, although I doubt it.
I think arcades are mostly done.
So do we. So do we, as we have reluctantly conceded in at least a couple episodes. We always revisit the topic, hoping to find a new ray of hope and seem to come up short.
Yeah, I don't think it's coming anytime soon.
Yes, yes.
And though it has nothing to do with the news, really, I will comment. If Tom recalls our last visit to Boomers, I'm really looking forward to the increase in the feral cat population that the destruction of the hurricane is going to cause.
Oh, the hurricane wooden roller coaster that has become a cat sanctuary, right?
Yeah. It's a giant cat tree, and it's been there, like, undisturbed for 5 years.
Where are they going to go now?
I don't know. It's either going to be a very bloody Sunday on 95.
whoever made the decision to build that freaking roller coaster should just be flogged in public. I mean, that's got to be one of the worst business decisions of all time.
That is what caused Grand Prix's sellout to Boomers.
it seemed to draw a decent number of riders, but that it just wasn't enough to do anything but maybe cost them money. So yeah, that, and Brian's right. That's what caused them to sell. And it was just never, no, you know what? Even though it drew riders, it wasn't run profitably, obviously. Yeah, I'm with you, Cam. Bad business decision, even if I thought it was cool.
I mean, it was like $10 to ride all day, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, something ridiculously cheap.
Yeah, but how many times are you going to ride the same roller coaster before you're like, eh, okay. Yeah.
Well, I rode it like 5 or 10 times one day, but for $10, I mean, they were losing money even when it was at its most popular.
I have a theory, actually, that the cats there have formed a colony, like the Secret of Nim. We're just not aware of it yet, and they're plotting world domination.
That's all right. I got plenty of catnip.
don't hit up that upcoming strip mall if you've got a cat allergy. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm really excited about the epic battle that will take place there. The cats defending their home turf, and it's going to be good.
They're going to chain themselves to the roller coaster when the when the bulldozers roll up. Exploding kittens in real life.
They're going to have cat. There we go. Exploding kittens. Yeah. Right. I thought they were just going to have a cat in.
A cat in.
Oh, I'm here all week, folks. Try the veal. Try the veal.
Oh boy. So, anything else, Brian, or is that it for your news?
The cat in is it for my news.
Okay.
They're not going to take that fee lion down.
Oh, all right. So, I'm not going to. I'm going to.
You just going to take a pause there, Tom?
Nah, I'm just going to. Oh, my God. Right.
A big furry pause?
No, the pause. That's good. That's a good one. That's a good one, but I'm not going to do it. All right. Perfect segue over to you. Chris, why don't you go next? Why don't you let us know what's been going on?
First off is Wizards of the Coast, the makers of Dungeons & Dragons. They're really serious about getting feedback, and they spent a whole year and a half getting feedback for the latest edition of Dungeons & Dragons, which is the 5th edition. It has become one of the more popular editions in its history. Of course, comparing that to the very short 6 years that 4th edition was out, probably is not a fair comparison. In continuing that trend, they actually now have a survey out about what you think's going on with certain aspects of the game, and they're going to actually take that feedback and roll it in into revised editions going down the road. If you go to enworld, as in echonovemberworld.org, that's one of the top trending stories they have. You'll find it on the front page. You can click on that and be taken to the survey, because the survey has a really weird survey sort of URL that makes no sense. Or it's not very catchy. And then wrapping up with the Kickstarters, for those who have fond memories of reading R.A. Salvatore books back in the day with that Dungeons & Dragons hero, what was his name, Drizzt?
Yes.
Drizzt, the lone elf who was unloved because he came from the evil elves with his panther buddy, which is in no way any kind of Mary Sue character.
Oh,
ever.
No, not at all. Ever. Yeah, not in the least.
Never. He's got a role-playing game called Demon Wars, and he went to Kickstarter for it, or he's going to Kickstarter for it. So, if you want to have good memories of that, there's yet another excuse to go check out the subject of our podcast.
That, of course, being Kickstarter. But, before we get into that, one more round of news. Cam, what you got?
Just for the sake of brevity, guys, I will just hit you with the rapid-fire news that I came across this week, and you guys can comment or not comment, and then we can move into our topic. Fantastic Four, the new reboot trailer came out. Looks pretty awesome. World of Warcraft is getting a selfie camera, so if you're a WoW player, you can take selfies of your avatar. If anyone's got $50,000 or $60,000 laying around, you can buy a 47-year-old Star Trek phaser that was actually used by James Tiberius Kirk, Mr. William Shatner himself, in a very popular episode. Just on the home front here, guys, since we're doing some local news with boomers, apparently millions of GMO insects are going to be set loose in Florida, down here in South Florida in the Keys, to combat dengue fever and some other African fever that I can't pronounce. But they're genetically modified mosquitoes that are supposed to prey on other mosquitoes and other insects that carry those diseases and kill them. But, you know, it's sort of worrying me that the cure might be worse than the disease. So we'll see how that goes. Finally, I think the best news of the day is that our Nerdstravaganza Facebook page hit 800 likes today. And I'm going to pledge to our listeners that if you guys go out and like our Facebook page, the 1,000th I don't know what you would call them. The 1,000th person to like our Facebook page will get a signed, autographed Doctor Who autograph, of my choice, and a autograph Star Trek autograph of my choice. I have tons of memorabilia. It'll be great. Don't worry. I'm not going to stiff you guys. So like our page, and the 1,000th person to like the page will get some free swag.
So you're saying I am 200 clicks away from getting my swag.
Yeah, you can get, you might end up with a pretty cool, George Takei signature, maybe a Colin Baker, signature. You never know.
Plus, as a great value add, we are willing to completely destroy the resale and or collectability value of any of those by signing ourselves.
Yeah, if that's what you want, we'll do it.
Cool. Well, thanks for that, Cam. That should get him liking.
Yeah, hope so.
And is that it? Got more?
That's it. Feel free to comment, or we can move on to the topic.
At this point, I mean, we've done an episode.
Yeah, right.
I am so looking forward to the cats getting dengue fever and then being released.
To scratch everyone and give it to them.
Life always finds a way, man.
I know.
Life always finds a way.
Isn't Chris Pratt going to be in the Jurassic Park movies too? He's Indiana Jones and he's going to be in Jurassic World or whatever.
I'm skipping that one.
Life finds a way.
Let it be known that this was the sort of conversation done at the dawn of humanity's self-inflicted extinction,
right?
Via the release of genetically modified pests.
Yeah, I'd be lying if I told you I wasn't pretty worried about that. That just seems like a bad apocalypse movie waiting to happen, you know.
And we cannot be held responsible for what we're saying right now. We're under the influence of dogs and spiders. If this is ever heard by our mosquito and cat overlords.
All right, guys. So end of the world notwithstanding, let's get to the end of this podcast by getting into our topic. Our topic is Kickstarters, specifically some cool video game related Kickstarters I saw at PAX. And I would like to go through them. I've got five. I feel that's enough to get a good feel. Go through them, talk about them. Get your thoughts on them as concepts and your thoughts on the Kickstarters as they are being executed or have been executed. Some of these have already concluded. So let's kick it off, pun fully intended, by talking about a game that has already been funded, but that was nevertheless on display to generate interest at PAX. A game which I think you guys will like because you're into werewolf and mafia and that sort of game, called Town of Salem, which is sort of a video game implementation of the idea of catch the bad guy, not be caught as the bad guy. That's my kind of inarticulate way of describing werewolf and mafia. What do you guys think?
I think the art is a little Lego-ish, though, don't you think?
it's got a unique style, yeah.
Yeah, that's. I mean, it looks like a fun game. I'm not gonna say I think I probably would enjoy playing it, but I don't know. The art is turning me off a little bit.
Well, have you guys looked at the screen where it shows where it plays out? Basically, it's a village and a village square. I should say circle, and that's where all of the players come out.
Right.
I mean, it's a simple game with a simple art style. I think it's more the play mechanics that would interest people than the art, but. If you're comparing it to like the awesome art style of Werewolf, I could see where you might be let down a little bit.
Yeah, no, I mean, I don't have a problem with, you know, like cutesy kind of art. It just like when I look at the splash page, it just reminds me of like the Lego Movie.
Fair enough, not to your liking.
Yeah.
Anyone else with some feedback, or did you have more to say, Cam? Sorry.
No, I was just saying, but it looks like a fun game. I'm sure I would have fun playing it.
So this is more like just getting to play something like Werewolf Online with online friends, right? Or are you playing AI or both?
I believe it is a I don't remember if they told me that it would fill in any slots with other online players or AI. I know there's a local option. So I'm not sure if you're able to play with just your friends and a bunch of AI characters or not. I didn't get into that level of detail, but I do know this. I know that there are a number of sort of basic classes you can play or roles that can be played, and then like a whole bunch of additional ones on top of that. So it's pretty. It can get complicated.
I can't help but think that this looks fun. It kind of sounds fun, but you're going to be missing so much of the social cues.
Right.
Right, right, right. Well, I mean, you know, there's no getting around that. This is going to allow you to play remotely over the internet for when you can't play in a room with people. I mean, I do think that any attempt to port a tabletop game to a console or a PC for play over the wire is going to fall short when it comes to that, right?
Oh, always.
Yeah, yeah, there's just no getting around it, so.
It might be fascinating to see what people think of, like, why'd you use that smiley? You're acting suspicious.
Right.
Only the witch would use that emoticon.
It might be interesting, though. Like, I've heard certain people cop to, like, listening for people's motions during the narration portion of Werewolf and stuff like that, which I find, I don't know, I guess you can't help but do it, but I think a win-at-all-costs player could ruin Werewolf basically by cheating, whereas this would maybe prevent that, but I don't know, that's just me talking about certain player types we've encountered, I guess. So that might be an advantage to the remote style, maybe.
Tabletop gaming's going to evolve us. We'll have echolocation, and we'll be able to read intent through text.
Yeah, or we'll have, like, everyone's, like, you know, vital signs just showing up, you know. Ah, his temperature just increased by 2 degrees. He must be lying.
His perspiration smells like deceit.
Exactly.
I smell your fear.
So what do you guys think? Looking at the now completed Kickstarter page, they had a goal of $15,000 and they raised $17,190. I think that's pretty modest, and they were able to deliver with that. That seems like a pretty cut and dry Kickstarter.
Yeah, for me, any Kickstarter that, you know, gets the project finished and the project's delivered is a successful Kickstarter. It doesn't have to be millions and millions of dollars. That's just my two cents.
I agree.
$17,000, isn't that kind of in line with a tabletop Kickstarter? I mean, just ballparking it. I mean, they number in the thousands of dollars, not hundreds of thousands typically, right? Or am I... Well, no, I shouldn't say that. Some of them get quite high, do they not?
I'm sorry, you said $17,000 for Town of Salem?
That I'm looking at, yeah.
Well, I'm looking at $114,000.
Yeah, oh, are you sure you're not looking at the expansion? Because there's the core game... the original browser game, and then there's sort of an add-on, I think, maybe?
Oh, so the Steam add-on?
Perhaps, yeah. Here, let me share with you the original Kickstarter.
Good Lord.
It could be that having succeeded, they went back for a second, much more ambitious round.
Yeah, there was one that was in March of last year. I think that was the original base game, and then the mobile Steam expansion was in October of last year.
Interesting that... commanded a much higher premium than the original game, right?
Well, no. I mean, once you know you struck a little gold, then you got to, you know, keep digging, right?
Yeah, 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 yeah. Dig faster and with more expensive equipment.
And frack the world to hell, right?
Yes.
This is really interesting to me because looking at Blank Media Games' history, they originally tried and unsuccessfully funded. Their original goal was $20,000. They only raised $1,300. And then they went back and they raised their $17,000. And then they went back and they raised $100,000.
Yeah, so what you're saying, like, try
I'm just
again.
Fascinated. Like, good for them.
Yeah, I think tenacity paid off in this case, so...
Or they definitely learned from their mistakes.
Right, right, right. So, Town of Salem, pretty cool take. Maybe with objectionable art style to some, but on a popular in-person concept. Modest initial goal, which has since grown. I do believe they were boasting of a pretty established player base so that you would not lack for people with whom to play. So good job. Good on them. And pretty interesting. I thought you guys might like that one because I knew you were into the games that inspired it.
Definitely.
Yeah, I'd love to play this. I'm really curious how you're going to, what cues people are going to find. Like, you misspelled that. You're evil.
Yeah, that's a great point, Brian, actually. I didn't even think about that until you brought it up. That's awesome.
You spent an odd number of seconds deliberating. That tells me something.
No, I was lagging. Seriously. I'm not the wolf. Don't burn me.
Yeah. Well, because, I mean, and it's just the little subtle things that give people away. And Chris, you well know, we just played, what were we playing the other day? On Thursday, we were playing Avalon, wasn't it?
Yes.
And I tagged you as Merlin because you gave yourself away just ever so slightly. And I was like, yep, all right, that's it.
And the minute you looked at me and you said, I know what I need to know, I knew that you knew that I knew. And I knew who you were and you knew who I was.
Exactly.
I was like,
yeah, how's that going to translate, you know, on the line, as they say in movie parlance?
But it's working, and it's $100,000 worth, so obviously people dig it. Yeah. I got to play this.
Awesome. All right, let's move on to another one, an ongoing Kickstarter. A game called Retro Blazer, which is billed as a run-and-gun action first-person shooter. What struck me about this game is its vibrant colors. Like, they had a, it has a lot of, I don't know what the word is, kind of have a, it has sort of a pinky pastel-y look to it, for lack of...
That would be called neon pink for those who are in the 1980s.
Okay, yeah, sure.
Yeah, it's almost like Tron-ish, you know? Like, Tron-ish? Does that make sense? Like,
yeah, a pink Tron-ish theme, maybe?
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, pretty cool first-person shooter. Has maybe echoes of Borderlands, meets your classic FPS. Apparently, they went the anthropomorphic... animals route with the characters and enemies, which I think is cool. So before we get into the Kickstarter, its funding levels, its goals, etc., what do you guys think? Are you looking at the Kickstarter, its screenshots, particularly the art style, which I think is kind of unique? What are your thoughts?
I actually love the art. I wish they would put the art from this game into the other game. Because, you know, first-person shooters are fine. I mean, I grew up on them. You know, they're great, but... You know, these days I'm more into the social deduction, those kind of games. So that this art with that gameplay would be perfect for me. But
you like the bright pink flames?
Well, I think just looking at the website, but I mean, if you look at the actual Kickstarter page, it's toned down a little bit.
The Kickstarter looks like a really badass, like neon sci-fi. Like, it looks great.
Yeah. I like it.
Yeah, the neon sci-fi is a very good, apt description, I would say.
It's like Tron and the original Battlestar Galactica and the original Doom all got together and had a really crazy love baby.
Well, and then, and Stargate. They threw in some Stargate,
too. Stargate.
And a little Chippendale Rescue Rangers, maybe. With the
Monterey Jack. I loved him.
What do you guys think of that decision to go with the anthropomorphized heroes and villains, the sort of animal forms meet sci-fi?
I mean, I like it. I like the whole theme. I like everything about it. I just wish it wasn't a first-person shooter.
Well, something that Nick and I were commenting on when we were checking this out, we were a little concerned, and it's sad that I think it's come to this, but we were a little concerned that the sort of animal person thing might, and I know this is going to sound very judgmental of me, but basically might draw in the furry types, or might be meant to appeal to them, which I know shouldn't give me pause or make me feel not good about this, because that's me being a judgmental prick, but, you know, nevertheless...
I'm going to time out because, okay. I mean, you know, for years and years, you could have anthropomorphic characters in comic books and video games, and there was no, there wasn't a furry thing. It wasn't furry. It was just an art style you had. And it's because it's basically getting to be a pet peeve of mine that anytime anyone sees a lion head on top of, like, a beefy character, suddenly they say it's furry. And I'm like, no, it could be just a lion man, or it could be, like, the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. In fact, it's gotten the point to me where I see that the type of things that people that are really kind of in that furry community have a very particular anime sort of style to it that I can kind of peek at. You know, I can actually identify without having to see the six breasts or the really weird bulge they got going on.
Speaking of social deduction games, I'm outing Chris as the furry.
Well, you can out me as the guy in the 1980s that played those kind of, like, I played a whole Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle campaign, but I don't consider myself a furry, and I definitely don't, if I have some costumes and cosplay in my closet, none of them have, none of them have fur on them. I'll go double check, but no.
Chris, let me ask you this one. This will out you as a furry or not. Was Riff Raff's girlfriend from the Heathcliff cartoon hot or not?
trying to even remember what the Heathcliff cartoon
okay,
was.
Okay, you're not a furry. Okay, cool.
Okay, there we go.
Full disclosure, I might be guilty. Sony was hot as hell.
That's a psychological question. That's awesome.
I was even like, who the hell's the Heathcliff cartoon?
And full disclosure, so was Gadget.
From Rescue Rangers?
Gadget, wow.
Yeah, so by the way, that was sort of proto-furryism. If you were like into those girls, if you were like one of my friends who really liked drawing the girl from Heathcliff, like really drawing her, then and talking about how hot she was, you were definitely a proto-furry. Furryism owes its very existence to you.
And the internet.
And the internet, yeah, which made it... which made it a scene, I guess.
Available.
Which made it available. There you go.
They made it an internet rule, number 34.
Well, okay, and there you go, Chris. My only fear is we're one rule 34 search away from the rule 34 retro blazer and seeing something we don't want to see. But you know what? Can't blame the game for that. I think it looks cool.
I suspect they would have a much better chance of funding if they had a nude patch.
Yeah, speaking of...
So I'm actually going to suggest that. Like, look, I'm not saying I'm into this, or that one of my podcast members who actually was the one who suggested this is. But nude patch, probably get that funding goal for you. Speaking of which...
Right. I don't think there's any chance they're going to make it, do you?
Well, we're 26... days to go. They've got $2,300 raised out of $110,000 goal. You guys think that's doable or not?
No.
No chance, I'm afraid.
Well, most Kickstarters, especially the successful ones, they have a big jump at the beginning, and then it kind of plateaus for a long time. And then towards the end, as it gets towards the end, people kind of go, oh shit, I better do it or not.
Yeah,
and then it kicks up again. I'm sorry, but $22.99, that is not a big climb at the beginning. If we went to KickTracker right now, I guarantee you this thing would call it a fail.
Yeah, it's not going to happen.
That sucks, because I kind of want to play it. So I'll probably pledge just out of loyalty. That's a shame, because it's got a long history of development, and I think it could be cool. Kind of a different FPS. But do you think 110,000 is too audacious a goal? I mean, software development is a pretty intensive process, as is development of the assets and any marketing they would want to do.
I think this is a lot for a first campaign. I mean, $2,000, they obviously have not advertised this, because you would get more than $2,000 just like having a Facebook ad or having a write-up and some stories and things like that. So I think they're going to learn, and I would not be surprised if they bring this back and have a successful second campaign.
With a more modest goal, or with the same goal but more support behind the Kickstarter?
I mean, if they can cut it with a more modest goal, but I mean, a lot of video games are funded for about $100,000.
Okay.
So
I'd like to see this one succeed. So whether in this round or in a future round, I hope they do meet with success.
Well, I think you should cross your fingers. They're trying to get on Steam Greenlight, so even if they fail the Kickstarter, if they get on Greenlight, you at least will get a taste of the game.
That's true. I've played some games through that, so yeah. Let's hope.
What's next?
Okay. Let's move on, yeah. I've got another video game for you. This one is also fully funded. It is a game in the Sega Genesis vein called KR17. And it features a little, I'm guessing, robot hero. He certainly seemed robotic when I played it. And cool art style, really cool, just cute little kind of 16-bit looking game. And when I played it, I was asking the person, let me play the demo, whether or not this was based on like the Sega Genesis color palette. He said it very much was. In fact, it was based on the color palette of a game called Rocket Knight, I believe, which is, again, another anthropomorphic character who had like a rocket. That was a Genesis game, I think, kind of towards the end of the Genesis life cycle, if I recall correctly. And a really cool game. And had a very modest goal, met that goal, and was fully funded. and it turned out to be a good product. So, what do you guys think of this? What do you think of KR-17?
Looks cute. I like it. Looks it's sort of like a Sonic meets Mega Man, sort of. You know, it looks pretty cool.
I got a Keith Courage and Alpha Zone vibe off of it, the way the guy moved and his bulk too, which is a the TurboGrafx pack-in game for those who don't know.
Yeah.
I'd like to point out that something that you just kind of didn't mention at all. This has got Ouya support.
Oh yeah, yeah. Ouya. I mean, sorry, Ouya. I have quite forgotten what the Ouya is. It's not a SteamOS thing. Is it just a Linux console?
No, it's Android. It is an Android
that's
console.
Right. That's
that,
right.
So it was Kickstarted itself. For $99, you could get your own copy. I think a lot of people had questions in the landscape. What made this any different than like getting a nicer tablet to play on? And then, you know, some phones now are like tablet sized.
This is a super Game Boy for your phone.
Okay, so there you go, Ouya support. That's a cool thing, right, Brian?
Yeah, I think it's neat. I mean, it's not only Ouya.
Yeah. It just has that support. So yeah, that is kind of cool. What do you guys think of this? I mean, not at all understanding the difference between what's going on with Retro Blazer and this. I have to assume that this was a more, and not to take away from it anyway, a more simple development process requiring less, if not effort, money, let's just say. I think this was cool. You have a modest goal. You know what you can get done. You get it together, you get it funded. I think that this is, I mean, is a smaller Kickstarter, it would seem to me a smaller level Kickstarter is safer. I mean, it's easier to raise the money, right? Because this has total as many backers as almost as Retro Blazer has so far.
I mean, I'm just amazed that they could put it together for $3,000.
I know. And I may be missing the fine print in the Kickstarter. Like we have this 90% done or something, but, I don't know. I thought it was pretty interesting. I do note something in the description though. There's a question asked, what makes this game different? Simply put, it's not different. So it's a variation on a familiar theme, but a beloved theme of just sort of a platformer adventure, right? So I don't know. A new implementation on a time-tested and successful concept is maybe not a bad idea either with a Kickstarter. In addition to a modest goal.
Hey, as long as it's cheap and it's fun, it's always welcome at my table.
Yeah, was fun. I did play it. We'll probably go about picking myself up a copy.
There's a lot I like about this. $10 for the game, so not a hard-to-swallow buy-in. They claim to have a story to tell, so it's not just a run-and-gun. It's not just mindless violence.
Right.
It's very retro. I mean, you can't go wrong with retro these days.
No, you cannot. No.
And yeah, I think this is a good way for them as, who are they? For Wonderfling to build a presence, because this, maybe not their, first real campaign. It looks like they tried this once before and were unsuccessful, but then they tried it again and did it. So they're clearly learning. They clearly improved. Very nice.
Cool. So we could see future projects from them, this having been a success, so.
I can't wait for KR-18.
There you go. In 3D. All right, let's move on to another one. This one also funded. This one I saw on the PAX floor. A game called Steam Bandits Outpost, which is a steampunky kind of RPG. I really dug this. I dug everything about it. The art style, I dug the steampunk theme, I dug the floating islands that reminded me of, like, Final Fantasy Tactics. This was overall cool. And met with success. They had a more audacious goal of $30,000. And if they were currently funding some kind of expansion and I missed that, I hope they forgive me, but I wanted to discuss the game in general and its Kickstarter. What do you guys think of this one?
I think it has a good pedigree. I mean, you know, they're talking about Tropico and they're talking about SimCity and Tribes and League of Legends and, you know, not wanting to redo a Facebook sort of thing.
By the way, it was wrong of me to characterize it as a an RPG when in fact it was a building game in that vein. I apologize for it. I was having a brain fart when I said that. But yes, it does have a good pedigree. Another variation on a time-tested theme. So what do you guys think? Maybe this game your bag, this type of game your bag? What do you think of the way of the look and the look of it?
Well, it's obviously, you know, it's this the whole steampunk thing is cool. I mean, that's very in vogue these days, obviously. I like it. I mean, the more I look at it, the more I like it. At first, I kind of was a little turned off by it, but the more that I look at the depth of the art, I like it.
I think their platform is interesting. They are apparently selling in-game purchases, but it's not... A lot of people are kind of fond of that. It's not necessarily like, here's a bigger, better gun.
Yeah, well, there are a couple aspects to it. So I actually have the brochure here from PAX, which is more updated. I'm almost wondering if we missed a newer round of funding. Because this brochure is saying that there's a release coming in 2015. And in addition to like world building is showing the elements I remember playing, which was kind of the... RPG elements where you were actually out on an adventure. I think that it got legs behind it, and they are now, if I gather things correctly, expanding.
Well, from the look at it, I mean, it might be the first kind of town building game in the new vein of the how you do the town building that I might get into. You know, I haven't really done any stuff like this since The Sims.
Well, you're a sucker for steampunk, right?
Maybe.
Oh, this would be right up your alley.
Maybe just a little. I can definitely tell you I am not a furry type of person, but yeah, I'm a sucker for steampunk. And like I said, from what I'm seeing, because people tell me, oh, you should do Farmville or Townville, and I look at them and I'm like, they don't engage me that much, and also the idea of bugging my Facebook friends doesn't throw me either. But this, especially being free to play and just something to goof off with as a time waster. Looks fun.
Yeah, I had a pretty favorable view of it based on checking it out. So,
do they actually have the game up and going somewhere, or is it still in development?
I believe it's live now. I'm a little confused now because I'm torn between the Kickstarter I uncovered in trying to motivate the Kickstarter discussion and this flyer that I got handed out. But I do believe it's up and running at ATM and at the moment. Which is, I just made that up.
I like the little steampunk robot guy they have with the bowler hat and the handlebar mustache.
Very cool.
Oh, you can never go wrong with a mustache and a bowler for your robot.
Yeah, that guy, he looks pretty cool.
Yeah, I don't know. I think steampunk is definitely, I like it. Steampunk is something that, unlike zombies and vampires, has not been played out yet, in my estimation. I still am into it to a certain extent. I don't know if I would sign up or go to a convention necessarily, but I do like it. And man, I'm really puzzled, guys. I should have prepared a little better. I'm a little alpha available on Steam, so I don't know if maybe they did a relaunch of it or something. The creators are at Iocane are free to contact us with corrections and or suggestions.
Iocane powder from The Princess Bride. I wonder if that's where they came up with the name.
I would imagine that is exactly where they came up with the name.
Okay, now they get major points from me.
Regardless of the current state of the game, we have a fully funded Kickstarter that took place a few years back. Their goal was 30 grand. They got 55. Good on them. Good execution. And a cool game. With good art
style. No pay to win. I like it.
Oh, that's right. In fact, that was the thing I remember the guy telling me. We're not pay to win. We're pay to, what did he say?
Style, they call it.
Yeah. I think he said pay to skin or something like that. But yeah, exactly. Pay to style works too. Right. It was about enhancing your experience, not like buying your way to victory. And he made a point of telling me that. The other thing. Oh, that's right. Now I totally remember my play session. I had to go into this dungeon and like find a hidden treasure and all this good stuff. And I was playing, that was the other feature, is it was, the save was transferable onto any device, so you know, your game. Oh. No matter what you were playing on, you could just continue your game, which I thought was cool. Kind of a take on the vaunted crossplay feature of the PlayStation 4, but at about 1/1,000,000th of the cost. So anyway, sorry it took me a minute to collect all my thoughts on that one, but Steam Bandits Outpost gets a vote up from me, and it would seem from you guys as well.
Definitely.
All right, moving on to my final selection, and this one was pretty much my favorite of the ones that are... Actually, this one's currently being kickstarted. It is Star Mazer. It is a really cool kind of anime-inspired game that is a King's Quest or... What is it? Space Quest was the kind of sci-fi adventure game, I think. Meets a shoot-em-up game like Gradius or R-Type or one of those. So it's going to feature missions where you're doing like the adventure game stuff, you know, exploring the point-and-click adventure stuff, and missions where you're like doing space shooter stuff against like bullet hell enemies. And in addition, it has a really cool kind of kitschy, like total like anime, like hey, I'm the hero style story going, evidently. I'm excited about this. I really liked it. As the ones being kickstarted, this was my favorite, as I said. What do you guys think of the adventures of the main story of a character whose name I think is Brick, actually?
I cannot see how those two genres will mix.
Mm.
That's like the most adrenaline packed and the least.
Pacing. That's how you do it. You can't constantly have somebody being all adrenalized all the whole time. They have to take a break of some sort.
Yeah, but what happens when you're in the mood for bullet hell and you sit down and you're like, well, shit, I'm not there. I gotta unlock it by going through this. Then you just load up another game.
Or maybe they have an arcade mode.
Well, then what would be the purpose of the game?
I'm kind of surprised we didn't have something like this back in the day when this was the technology, you know, that there wasn't some sort of crossover of adventure versus bullet hell.
If I were the one trying to square that circle as a designer, and again, knowing pretty much next to nothing about video game design, I will nevertheless take a stab at it. I would make it so that the point-and-click adventure game unfolded at your leisure. There was no time limit. You could, if you were stuck somewhere, you could walk away from it, go back to the spaceport and take off, and then come back to that whenever you wanted. You know what I mean? That would mean... So if I want to like not deal with like solving these puzzles right now, I want to go off and shoot, I just leave the space station, leave the planet, leave wherever I am, and go do my thing. That might take away a little bit from the story, but it would give players craving that sort of action their fix. And I'm not saying that's not exactly what they've done here. That's just how I would approach that. I don't know what you guys think.
This game seems pretty interesting to me. I mean, it reminds me of a lot of the, like you guys are saying, the bullet hell, like, late 90s games that came out, where it's just so much going on the screen. But like Brian said, I'm interested to see how the actual adventure portion is going to fit in.
If this were bullet hell game with cinemas, I'd back it right now. But, this is not a genre I've missed.
Really? You weren't a fan of those? I dug those, especially like Quest for Glory and certain games like that. But you just were not into that, Brian? I mean, were they too much of sort of a compromised RPG for your liking? Or?
Well, I was a fan of them when there was nothing better, but I think like games like Skyrim just do it better now. Like, you're so much more involved, and there's so many more options. Like, I'm not sure why I'd want to shackle myself again.
Shackle's an interesting way to put it. I don't know. I played the recent Monkey Island games a couple of years ago, and they took me right back into that genre, and I really enjoyed them. I mean, adding that with a bullet hell or shmup or shoot 'em up or space shooter, whatever you want to call it, I don't know. For me, that's a double win. If you're not into either or both of those genres, it's a single or double lose, I guess.
Well, I got into Broken Age, and I enjoyed it. That was the double fine. That did the 3.3 million.
Mm.
Well, good news for you. It's pretty much over the one-third mark.
Yeah, that's a great sign.
The rule of thumb for Kickstarters is if it can hit 30% or a third, it probably more than likely will be successful, or it'll meet its goal.
Good, I hope so. Yeah, it is seeking $160,000, and it's at close to $65,000 as of the time of this recording. So yeah, I hope it does. I'm going to back this one for sure. I want this to succeed. I want to play this. And I will report back on just how well the point-and-click adventure genre meshes with the shooter. I don't think their delivery date is imminent, so it'll be some time before I do that, but we'll be at like episode 9 zillion by then probably, but I'll revisit it, let you know how it is.
I'm surprised you didn't mention this, Tom. Their music's great.
Ah, their music is great, isn't it? And that's no accident. We talked to one of the musicians at the booth who was giving us some background on it. And as well, Nick and I attended a panel on video game music, and one of the contributing musicians, it was either musicians or sound engineers, was there. They have some definite talent working on the music and sound for this game. And yes, it really is great. And thanks for knowing me well enough to remember that game music is kind of a big deal for me, Brian.
Oh, Tom, you and I should talk sometime.
All right. Yeah, I am a game music guy. It matters to me. If the music sucks, it takes away from the game. And I have never understood people who, like, turn the game down and listen to, like, Smash Mouth or something.
Drowning Pool.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, I'm just trying to come up with some, yeah, I'm just trying to come up with some something I hate. Nickelback, what have you.
I have been guilty of buying games on the 50-50 ratio of the game being awesome and the soundtrack being awesome.
The soundtrack is important, man. It sets the mood.
Definitely. By the way, Kicktrack says that they think it's going to hit 179% of its goal.
Nice.
And maybe trend towards 286,000. Probably really close to 290, actually.
I hope that accelerates the development pace then, where you see it sooner then, because that would be cool. By the way, speaking of music, don't just take my word for it. If you guys scroll down to the music section, they devote quite a lot of attention to all those who are contributing on the musical front. So they are taking the music seriously in this game, and it shows.
And there's a great little clip.
Yes.
The Star Wolf. I'll have to check it out.
Yeah, definitely do. Anyway, this is the one about which I am most excited, and I hope you guys share my enthusiasm, at least about certain aspects of it, even if you are skeptical as to how they're going to mesh those two genres. I'm hopeful, but, you know, I don't know that I've seen it done successfully. If there's an example out there, I'm not aware of it. But there it is, man. Star Mazer. And that, I believe it's Mazer and not Mazer. That concludes my sort of walkthrough Kickstarter as I saw at PAX. So what do you guys think? Kickstarter a good avenue for video games as well as tabletop stuff?
It just amazes me how much they raise. I mean, like, you know, $100,000 is a lot of money, you know? It's amazing that they get that many backers to pay that much to get to those numbers. I mean, a big Kickstarter for a tabletop game is like, $20,000, you know, $25,000. So to hit 100, 150, 200,000, that's amazing.
Yeah, I was just thinking that 150 would be like runaway success for a tabletop, right? And not even fund these guys, not one single stretch goal.
Right. I mean, Exploding Kittens aside. but yeah, I mean, we've seen several like hugely successful tabletop Kickstarters that like didn't even come close to 100,000, but were still a huge hit. And then, you know, like I said, that's not even, you know, 160 is not even one single stretch goal, and that's just to get this thing made. It's crazy.
Well, I did three, and two of them were in the millions, and the other one I'm looking up was, they actually, their Storium, their goal was like a mere 25K, and they reached a quarter of a million.
I mean, I guess it makes sense. I mean, you need so much more manpower, you need so, you know, so many more man hours, and you know, so much more goes into the development. So I guess it makes sense, but you know, you gotta find that money somewhere. So
the converse makes sense too. It's definitely a bigger audience than a tabletop.
Right.
And especially if you do a nostalgia angle of some sort, I think that really kicks in the price too, because then you, You get a larger market. You get a lot of the lower-end baby boomers, a lot of the Generation X, and a lot of the Gen Y guys that remember them, remember those games in their very early youth.
Is it a larger audience that allows for higher goals on average, or is it just the reality of making a video game being different than that of making a tabletop game?
I think the larger audience makes it easier to meet those goals, but I have no doubt that you need $150,000 to make a game. And this is not low quality. I mean, this looks great.
Yeah, absolutely.
I know it's pixel art, but I'm pretty sure that it takes really good art to make pixels look nice.
And the music's definitely no slouch.
Yeah, the amount of creative input going into this game is not insignificant, so glad you guys recognize that. I will make believers out of you all by the end, I'm sure. And that's pretty much it. That's all I got. PAX was awesome. I could talk about a million more things, but I thought we'd narrow it down because we've done a couple of PAX episodes, and this turned out pretty well. Any final thoughts before we segue to our messages of farewell?
If anybody's back video game Kickstarters, do comment on the episode. I'm interested. I realize that I have never backed a video game, and I'm kind of curious why and what it's like, and just looking on the net, it doesn't seem terribly positive. It looks like a lot of unhappy people.
Yeah, I'd like some feedback on that, too. These that I'm going to back will be my first experience.
Well, in that case, my advice for you guys is to do the minimum goal you're comfortable with. Star Mazer, like, you get the base game for $15, right?
Believe that is the case.
So what I do is I like take that. It's only $15, and then I forget about it. I don't obsess about when it's going to come to me. It's just going to come to me when it comes to me, because it's already a year out, I'm sure. And when it comes out of the blue, then hey, it's like Christmas. It's a little gift to me from the past. I think that's what happens with a lot of these people, is that they get it and then they act like their $15 is about 10 times worth that, and they want their game now and they want it on deadline. You know, and a lot of these guys that are doing Kickstarters, I mean, the legit ones, they're doing it as a part-time job trying to also feed their families. So, you know, don't ever expect these Kickstarters to end on their deadline. Something's going to come up either in their personal life or a project, you know, parameter that went out of whack for some reason. And it's not, you know, I would say, think about it as a 2 year. If you're comfortable giving $15 for somebody for a year and a half to 2 years, then, you know, give that a try. Or I might have just scared you off, one of the two.
No, I don't know. I understand Kickstarter as a concept. I'm kind of surprised that video game kickstarting is so vastly different than tabletop kickstarting. That would not have occurred to me.
As far as the amount of money needed or the time that it takes for them, or how many people are unsatisfied with the amount of what they get out of their Kickstarter?
The amount of money needed is an immediate concern, but I can understand that. The percentage of projects that are successful looks to be abysmal. There's so many of these ideas that raise $32. And then, of course, there's a couple of horror stories out there about games just going tits up with no return. I was just reading a story during this. It's 37% deliver as expected. 37% of successful video game Kickstarters deliver what they promised. So,
is there a tabletop game number to reflect that with?
I can look.
Yeah, I mean, I'd venture to say it's a lot higher.
I'm also surprised it's so that so few are successful. I mean, I don't know.
Successful in that they don't get funded at all, or successful in that they get funded but then they just don't deliver?
No, I mean, like, a successful campaign, they just don't get the funding.
I was thinking more about actual, like, completion and delivery of the project.
Well, that's 37% is okay. Actually completed and delivered.
Okay.
I guess some of the others are pared back or in demo status or...
I'm thinking what it happens is, you know, because when it comes to, like, designing a video game, you have to have a staff. You have to run a business.
Yeah, a 100,000 game is not a one-person thing.
Yeah, exactly. And a tabletop game, I mean, come on. The Overworld guys are, what, literally two guys, right?
Yeah, and they have day jobs.
I don't see a similar story about the success rate of tabletop Kickstarters, which makes me think it's not as big a problem.
I'll go with that.
Yeah, I can buy that. I would think maybe there's more that could go wrong in video game development. I don't know why I feel that way, but it just seems like there could be.
For video game development, you have staff. You're running a business. Tabletop, you can have two guys in a garage.
I suppose, yeah, you need a lot of cooks in the kitchen for the video game, maybe, right?
And it's certainly not equal to my experience, because I've so far probably 20 projects, and I've had one colossal failure.
Yeah, well, in any event, an interesting look into video game Kickstarters and a consideration of them relative to tabletop, a category with which we are more familiar and discuss more often. But we'll revisit some video game Kickstarters in the future, I think. We'll add that to the mix as we continue our slavish devotion to crowdfunding. Speaking of slavish devotion, though, guys, I think we do command such devotion from our fans, going so far as to demand that they do things like subscribe to our podcast, give us a favorable review, rate us a maximum number of stars, and the like.
I'm not quite as demanding as you, but I would encourage our listeners to kickstart their computers and head over to nerdstravaganza.com, where you can find all of our past episodes, tons of other content, videos, comic reviews, all kinds of good stuff. And I would ask you to pledge your devotion to us by sending us an email at nerdstravaganza@gmail.com.
Don't forget to like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter and Instagram, plus one us on Google+, and join the Nerdstravaganza HQ group on Facebook.
And with all of that farewell housekeeping out of the way, Chris, take us out.
And whatever our fans' projects are, we're hoping that you're going to keep stretching until you reach your goals.
Oh, man, I forgot to hit record.
Yeah.